Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. We hope you like what the Grasscutter Social Club is putting out.
Welcome into the
We can't wait to see
club.
You guys again
the social club
about a month.
For the everyman.
The new inductee to the Grasscutter Social Club.
If you've ever wondered
club.
What three average guys...
If you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast for any future updates. And share with your friends who you think might also enjoy our podcast.
Break
if you
want to
follow us on social media, check us out on Instagram at Grasscutter Social Club. Cheers. And until next time, take care.
We're a man short, and we went for just the three of us this time. We decided it's been too long. You guys are not getting enough of these episodes. You're not getting enough of us. And we're not getting enough of each other. So the three of us are going, not solo, but Branks, buddy, how you doing, man?
Good, good. I'm glad we set this up, man. I missed you guys. I wanted to talk, and I just wanted to get some things off my chest, you know?
Yeah. And Ron, buddy, it's good to see your smiling face.
Likewise. Ready to get into it.
And let's do it. Like, we're gonna try and keep this episode nice and short so we can digest them real quick and get them out to you guys. And hopefully we can start putting more of these out a little faster so you guys can hear us a little more often. But let's talk some Jays. We just had the World Series. The whole country, it feels like, was wearing blue and white for the last 6 weeks. And I think we're all still coming down off the disappointment. But World Series or bust next year. How are you guys feeling about this team? How are you feeling about the management getting them this far? I definitely, like, I made the joke early on. I don't know whether you saw that I didn't have Jays in the World Series on my bingo card. But what did you guys think just getting there?
A huge success. To my eyes, they were very much overachieved, you know? Like, they were plucky and just kind of got the breaks at the right times and got all the way there. You know, they were the best team in the AL, but only by a tiebreaker against the Yankees. And then all sorts of things kind of fell in their lap to get to where they did. I remember at the start of the year, I remember looking at their team and I was like, God, like, this stinks. Like, this is not good. And to think that I thought that and they made it totally validates why I stopped gambling, because my read on situations, sports and otherwise, is completely off always. So I should have just done the opposite. But yeah, huge success, man. How can you not be stoked about them being in the World Series and played like the way they did? Ron, what do you think, man? Did you see this coming?
No, I don't think anybody did, right? And that's what feels so great about it. Like, the sting has worn off for sure. It was a brutal way to lose. But I feel like it was always another team, another market that would have the Cinderella stories. Like, the Sens had a good playoff run like 10 years ago now, like against Pittsburgh, they lost there. Like, but I just feel like it's never really happened for a lot of Canadian teams. So it was just a sweet run. I'm already excited for next spring. And, you know, this band back at it, you know, we'll see if they get all the pieces back. But even just a full year of Yesavage, what he could potentially do, Bieber's back in the fold. It's going to be great. But no, like, the whole World Series, like, after it was done, it was just a huge void left in like all my TV and viewing and interest. Like, it was just, that was just very noticeable. It was very depressing.
Yeah. I was, and like, this is coming from like a baseball layman, right? Like, but it felt like the analytics kind of went out the window, and especially the hitting coach just said, you know what, we got to play with the deck we have and the cards we got. And it was like, we're going to put the ball in play. We're going to make the other team sweat and put pressure on them to make plays and play defense. And I think the interesting part about that seemed to really catch a lot of teams off guard through the whole playoffs, and even like those last 2-3 weeks of the season running into the playoffs, was that I feel like baseball, a lot of guys have just been sitting back on their heels, right? They're expecting a lot of fly balls and a lot of balls to be hit over the fence. And realistically, that's all everybody's trying to do, is work on their launch angle, work on their bat speed. and everybody's sitting back on their heels. And all of a sudden, the Jays are just like, you know what? We're going to slap it all around the diamond. And if you're not paying attention, we're going to catch you off guard at least once, at least, you know, and move everybody around the bags. And then all of a sudden, they're hanging 6, 7, 8, 9 runs on teams, playing a little bit of old school baseball. And I feel like it was a nice wake up call for the league, right? Mm-hmm. To see a team play like that and take the Dodgers to the limit was a lot of, not relief, but like made me feel like, okay, can the game take a step back and go back to just playing a little small ball, having more stuff happening every inning? Because I don't know. Kind of like with basketball, with the three-pointer, it feels like everybody's just going for those long shots and going for the big more win than, right away, right?
More than one way to win. You actually reminded me, remember when Buck was bashing the Yankees in the middle of the summer, saying they're not a good team, they only win when they hit home runs, and he got all that backlash? And
he, man, got lit up on Twitter.
Yeah. But to your point, Brian, like, this team won in a lot of different ways. And they definitely backed Buck up. Like, that would have just been all over the Twitterverse if the Yankees ended up beating the Jays, and they would have been throwing that Buck Martinez right in our face. So yeah, that was real sweet.
Yeah. Well, let's break it down. Who fucked it up? Who, how did we, you know, we took them to not just 7, we took them to extra innings.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, man.
Like, and how, like, you got to look back on it a little bit with, okay, Hoffman giving up that run to their number 9, Rojas, who's only had 7 home runs all year and really only hits, like, a home run every, I think it said every 80th at bat or something like that. 80th plate appearance.
To me, like, all this stuff about, like, you know, IKF, whether you had a big enough lead or secondary lead, like, that stuff is, like, so tedious. And, like, he was just doing what he was coached. Like, I squarely put the blame on Hoffman. Like, he cannot be throwing, like, off-speed pitches to a guy that's their 9-hole hitter. And, like, I've gone through that at-bat so many times just to watch it. Like, he could barely, like, get his bat on his fastball, and to try to throw him a slider inside, like, throw it away. Like, and if he walks him, so be it. Like it's not the end of the world. I know Shohei's coming up, but, like, you know, he still has to do the damn thing. Like, give yourself a reset and, like, do the thing. And I was just like in the moment, I remember thinking this was weird. And then, like, after the fact, the more I, like, digested it, and I don't know if I shared that video. There's, like, a video going around of, like, Will Clark, like, former San Francisco, like, first baseman, I think, like, just, like, losing his mind about that Hoffman slider. And I just remember being like, yes, like, somebody else feels the way I feel about Jeff Hoffman. But unfortunately for the Jays, that was, like, the crux the whole year. It was their bullpen being sort of, like, wobbly. And I just think that's what ended up costing us, is the thing that everybody knew was, like, the most wobbly part of our sort of makeup. So that's who I blame. What about you guys?
Well, I think it was the third slider in a row, if I'm remembering right. That's to Rojas. Right, yeah. Like, I don't think Hoffman had obviously his fastball command that he wanted. But yeah, I agree. You kind of got to get beat on your best pitch. In that sense, and that was just absolutely backbreaking. Dave Roberts' face after the home run, when he's just like, oh, like, looking around, like, he himself can't even believe what had happened. Like, it was just gut-wrenching. I mean, at the end of the day, is it anybody's fault? I mean, probably not, though. Like, the Dodgers were so lucky, solo home runs in the 8th, 9th. You know, obviously Will Smith there at the end, but just, like, you can't, you could play those 3-4 innings in a row, and, you know, that wouldn't happen again in 100 times, yeah, kind of thing. So it was kind of the best case scenario for the Dodgers. but I don't know if anybody truly screwed up. Other than, like, you know, that's a baseball thing. I don't love the selection. Obviously, the Hoffman, IKF.
Yeah, that's nice of you guys to say. I squarely blame IKF. Absolutely. I don't know. I can't, like, the one thing, and this is going to sound silly because I'm not very good at baseball, but one of the things I do pride myself on with TRV is having a bit of speed and not fucking up on the bags. Like, I don't often get caught, either caught stealing or, you know, jammed up or anything like that. And God, I always know you can take the distance the third baseman gives you. That's your distance. Maybe if you're going to be reasonable or if you're fat or slow, you got to be a step inside of him. But you take the distance that the third base gives you away from the bag, and that's safe. And he was so close to the bag. Like, he had another 8 feet he could have stepped away from that bag to be the same distance as the third baseman. And I couldn't believe how short he was. But the other thing I want to mention that really just broke my heart was the run of bad luck. Like, it felt like, looking back at it, when Jimenez takes that full swing after setting up bunt, and then somehow Muncy is literally in the one spot where his glove can snap up and get that ball.
Dude, that was,
because if Muncy's a foot to the left or a foot to the right, he can't make that play. It's too fast. Dude. And then the collision between Páez and Hernandez in the outfield, making that running catch, that ball gets dropped 99 out of 100 times. Like, there's no way those two collide looking over their shoulders, knowing that the wall is coming on the warning track. That ball, there's no way they catch that ball
a second time. That play was a total roller coaster, because off the bat, you thought it was a fly ball, and then it just keeps carrying. And you're like, oh.
And he keeps running.
Hernandez was in the blender. If Páez wasn't there, he totally was not making that catch.
He was fucked. They were fucked. Really gets me as just the hand of God working against the Jays is Kirk's broken bat. Right? Like, what happens to that ball if Kirk swings through and the bat doesn't shatter and the ball doesn't just, like, have that gentle roll? Like, do you know what I mean? Where does that ball go? What happens on that play if the bat just holds it together and he gets the contact that he's looking for? Maybe it's not a home run. That's not what I'm saying. But it looked like it's a single or a double. Just, I don't know. I just felt like the string of bad luck was outrageous. Outrageous.
But what I have said to everybody is, like, I was so captivated. Like, in terms of, like, baseball and just, like, nobody fucking up. And it was, like, the highest level of baseball. Like, everybody was on it. There was no, like, mental errors. It was just, like, that those last few innings was like just white knuckle ride. Like, it was so exciting. And it was really just like a feather in the hat of baseball. Cause I just haven't really watched all that much baseball this year. I kind of follow it, like, just from a distance, but, like, obviously going into the ALCS and the World Series, I watched so much, and I haven't really watched much with the pitch clock, and it's so much fun to watch because it just moves. There's no dragging. Like, I kept thinking how with the old rules, how long that last game would have taken. It would have been a 6-hour game. Like, so that's important because just all the, like, you know, there would have been all the, like, resetting and stepping off the rubber and mound visits to the Wahoo. And, like, it's just such a good product now. And I would say that was, like, my biggest takeaway from watching it. Was just, it was such a pleasure to watch, and makes me hopeful for the Jays' future, which is something we should talk about in terms of, like, how we think they're going to do next year coming off of this loss.
It was absolutely one of, if not the greatest World Series, and I'm not saying it as a Jays fan, just, like, looking over the whole series, it doesn't get better. It doesn't I can't remember it being better than that. I mean, what is it? The 2003 ALCS when Boston comes back down 3. That's up there for me as like a 7-game series that's like at the same level. But even then, that series, the first 3 games were boring. Boston got blown out. And then the next 2 games were boring. New York got blown out. They weren't like this. They weren't back and forth and everybody's on the edge of their seat. I would say, and I'm putting this out into the ether, and maybe, you know, God forbid somebody sends this on to MLB through some Twitterverse or something, but if MLB took out a nice little chunk of time, 7 days in a row in that period after the Super Bowl and just played the World Series again for us, I might actually just sit down and watch all those games again. And if they did the 18-inning game and they were like, we're starting it at 5 so that it's done at midnight, like, I'd sit and watch the whole thing, and I'd be happy to as a like lead up to spring training. Like, all right, spring training's coming, but before you watch spring training, check out last year's World Series, because that was fucking awesome.
That's a great idea. Do you remember when Sportsnet did that? It was like the 25-year anniversary of like the 93. I remember they did that. They played all, and it was great.
They played it all?
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a good idea. I would literally watch all 7 of those games. Just, it'd be disappointing, but it was such good ball. It was such a good series. Predictions? Any thoughts on next season? Are we World Series or bust again? Or
it's going to be. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think it's World Series or bust. I mean, it's hard to make the World Series. Like, it's, it would be a bust, obviously, if they don't make the playoffs. And I mean, we'll see who they sign. I mean, that's a question we should ask ourselves too. Like, who might they go after? I mean, I really hope they sign Bo Bichette. My bet with Connor aside about it, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see them. Could you imagine Kyle Schwarber?
I've been hearing a lot of Tucker rumblings that they're going to sign Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, he's injured a lot.
I think he's Ohtani-ing us for more money.
The problem I have with Bichette is that, like, he plays like a premium position that a lot of other teams covet, and I think somebody is more desperate than the Jays. Like, we just signed our cornerstone of our franchise for $500 million. Like, somebody's going to have – not that they have deeper pockets, but I think somebody will be willing to give Bichette more. Now, the thing is Bichette going to be the type of guy to be like, no, I want to run it back with the team I just won it with for, you know, 10 less or 20 less. That's up to him. His agent's Boris, who's notorious, like, for just squeezing every last penny out of the teams that his clients play for. So that doesn't make me feel great. But I feel like, you know, I hate to shore up our bullpen through the free agency, because I just feel like paying for bullpen arms is such a fool's errand, but there's got to be something.
Like Ryan?
Yeah, God. Oh, my God. Oh, that's a good one, Ron. But, you know, I heard them floating Edwin Diaz's name, and I'm like, God, I just don't love spending money there. I'd rather do it through a trade. Like, let's set Santander get hot or something and trade him away with that amount of money we gave him, or find some other way. But I'm hopeful. I think you're right, Ron. I think you hit it on the nose. Like, I think if they make the playoffs, it's good. Like, playoffs are such a roll of the dice. The fact that we made it as far as we did, you know, with our team was, you know, in some ways lucky, but in other ways, like, skills. So, like, let's just say playoffs are bust for me in terms of what I'm hoping for next year. And you know, I like the vibes with this team. It seems like they really actually like each other a lot, and, you know, vibes go a long way, so I'm hoping the vibes carry over.
Yeah, I mean, I think playoffs is a win, obviously. I think we're in the hardest division in baseball. Because I can see Boston spending, like, I think it's us in Boston and Who else would be in for Tucker?
Yankees, obviously.
Right? Like, yeah. And the Yankees in for Tucker. Like, that's three teams in one division all going after one guy.
And you figure Baltimore can't be as bad as they were this year because the year before
that. They were surprisingly bad.
Yeah.
They just traded Grayson Rodriguez, which was kind of surprising. So you never really know what's going on.
And, like, Tampa's always wily. Boston, I know, is going to make some moves because I do feel like Boston's up and coming. Like, Boston's getting close. So they're going to start pouring a little fuel on that fire to get them over the hump. But because they're Boston's better at – and I think Theo Epstein's back in Boston, right? Is that
– Oh, I don't know. I didn't know that.
I believe he is back in Boston. And he's so good. He's the best general manager in baseball history. Like, unbelievable. So, you know, Boston's going to end up being good real soon. Baltimore shouldn't have been as bad as they were. No. The Yankees, I don't know how they keep paying Brian Cashman, but
they're going to be good. That's true. You might be one of the longest tenured GMs.
I think he is the longest tenured. Yeah. He's 21 years, 22 years. Hmm. I think he's only got one World Series to his name.
I don't know when he came on. Yeah, 2009 they won the Yanks, but so he's got that one. I mean, let me ask you guys point blank though. Like, do you think the Blue Jays will sign Bichette? Do you think Bichette's back next year?
I'm going to try to will it into existence and say yes. Do you think so,
or do you want it? What do you think is most likely? Ryan, you're shaking your head no?
No. I think no, because I think we showed through the playoffs our depth at those infield positions, right? Who played third base? Clement, Barger?
Yeah,
Clement, Barger. Third guy. But that's, yeah.
That played third base. And I know what you're all saying, but like, I think those guys could also play second. Jimenez goes to shortstop. So then, like, you spend the money elsewhere. I think elsewhere. I think they keep those guys in a rotation between third and second. They move a lockdown defender like Jimenez to short, and they just put him in the nine hole. They keep Kenner Falefa as a backup for short in the nine hole. And then they spend the money elsewhere, which is probably why they're feeling out Tucker, right? Because
yeah, I think they sign him, but that is some wishful hopefulness in there that's willing me that way. But I just think he's been with Vlad forever. When Vlad signed, I think, you know, that they definitely would be speaking, right? You know, they're brothers. They in their own words, they say they're brothers. So.
Yeah.
If not this team after that run, then
boy, yeah, I was gonna say, like, I really think, like, he would probably be he should be willing to take a little bit less based on, like, what they've got going on, but mm-hmm. you know, Scott Boras is not like he's not an easy guy to negotiate with, notoriously. Maybe he'll do a short term thing and do like more money on a shorter deal. Maybe that's how they work it out.
Eventually, yeah.
And then give him some opt out years where he could go back on the market, kind of like he did with Bregman. Although he's a lot younger than Bregman, but maybe do like 4 years and do you know, maybe 25 per, so like $100 million, 4 years, $100 million with like some opt outs. Because like I heard like Sport Track had it pegged like 8 years, 200 or something was his like sort of like predicted worth on the free agent market, but that's a lot less than 25. Oh, that's pretty much 25 per. So I don't know, just speculating here.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like in baseball news, Boras has fucked up a couple of guys the last couple of years by like. Holding out yeah. and trying to squeeze more and more. And then he's been left with nothing, and the whole league
That happened a few years ago when they were trying to like suppress like how much the pitchers were getting. And that's why Snell signed that shorter term deal.
That's right. It was Snell that got squeezed. And wasn't there somebody else that got squeezed
too?
Yeah,
there was a few guys that same year with Snell that they just weren't willing to pay, but Snell ended up getting paid. So that's how he does it. Like when the guys don't get, or if he feels like they're not going to get it in that year, they sign those short-term deals. And then when they come up, if they have a half-decent year, then, you know, they almost like reset the market in terms of like, well, okay, you didn't want to pay him last time. Like he's up again. Like, and he just had another good year. Like, what are you willing to pay him now? And like, eventually they cave. Right. So I'm kind of hoping for Toronto's sake that Bichette finds it in his heart to take our money versus somebody else's. Mm-hmm.
It feels like what you guys are describing, like 25 a year doesn't feel bad. That feels all right. Is it too much?
$25, let alone 25 mil. So I can't speak to that.
The Jays, they got deeper pockets than we all think.
Well, they were the fifth highest. Yeah, they were the fifth highest bankroll. Like, I know people shit on the Dodgers for their payroll being 350 this year, but ours was like 250. So it's not like we were fucking, you know, playing with pocket change. Like, we spent a bunch of money.
Yeah, we were only one Ohtani and Snell away from being as good as the Dodgers. That's right. All right, gang, let's shall we take a little break and come right back? We're gonna talk a little food.
Sometimes them's the breaks.
Which one are you drinking, Ryan? Like, what's your go-to non-alcoholic one
for wintertime? The Guinness Zero is so good.
I've heard the Guinness Zero tastes pretty much like this, the real thing. Like, you can't really tell the difference.
Yeah, it's so good. I would even say with the Guinness Zero, when it gets warm, it doesn't have that same coffee bitter that I find with regular Guinness.
Yeah.
So it's nice. Like, I can drink it room temperature or whatever. It's so good. But I've been telling people, like, the best ones are usually the big brands, like Heineken and Guinness are hands down the best. If you like a beer that's got a lot of taste, the Sapporo is really good. Some people just don't like Sapporo, but,
it's close. If you're going to have one, I don't get too banged up about it, but
yeah,
I guess if you're drinking a bunch of them, then you kind of,
and then. You know what I was sucking back a lot this summer was Cronenberg Blanc.
Oh, yeah.
Has a zero. And, man,
like a two lot of those, people have zeros, man. That's crazy.
Two of those, ice cold in a hot summer day. Ooh-wee. Yeah. Little slice of orange. Not much better than that. Real good.
Sometimes them's the break.
You might be opposed to therapy and other mental wellness techniques. Sharing your problems and stresses may be difficult for you. You are not alone. Join us at the Men's Therapeutic and Wellness Center to try our new revolutionary techniques, where our mantra is live well, play well, be well. Play 9 or 18 holes of golf on our full-size links course. Watch sports for as long as you like without your kids or wife in one of our Comfort Plus Lazy Boy chairs. Test your general knowledge in our talking headspace, where you'll find overly opinionated blowhards yapping about sports, home care, renovations, food, and travel. Full service bar and restaurants available at your leisure. All credit billing and insurable payments appear as the Men's Therapeutic and Wellness Center. To relieve you of any probing questions from wives or insurance companies. So stop by and see if we are a fit for you. Try out our revolutionary techniques to share absolutely nothing about yourself, but escape the stresses and anxieties of your normal day-to-day and enjoy 25% off at Papa Bear's Pro Shop prior to your first round of therapy. Live well, play well, be well. The Men's Therapeutic and Wellness Center.
All right, we're back. We're talking food. but selfishly, we're talking about the food that that we get to order, that we get to eat when the wives aren't influencing the choices, when we don't have to worry about feeding the kids or ordering some massive amount of food for a whole gang of people. So we're talking a little takeout, and then we're going to also talk some emergency meals. Like, what do we keep in the fridge down in the bottom that's collecting some freezer ice for those days where it's like, can't cook tonight. So this is a no cooking segment.
Yeah.
But here we go. What's your go-to when the wife's not around, Branks? What do you like to snag?
I mean, pizza's always the easy one. There's a really great place down the street from us that makes like a really good like Neapolitan pie, and it's always quick to get them to deliver it or even like go over and grab it if I need it. But I've been like trying to like experiment a little bit. Like a couple of times I've gotten like a shawarma plate. I'm trying that out. And then something that I've thought about doing recently, I haven't pulled the trigger yet because I'm just not sure if I can eat as much as I think I could, but is Indian. Like, I love Indian food. Problem with Indian is like you only feel right about ordering it if you order a bunch because you kind of want the leftovers. But then I imagine myself having like six of those containers and like me being one man seeing how much I could finish. Could be a little bit messy, you know, and it's not the best next day meal in terms of how you feel. So, but you know, pizza's a reliable one just because I get to order the kind of pizza I want versus having to like kind of, you know, canvas the opinions of my kids and my wife, which is inevitably like a cheese or a pepperoni. I'd like to try some different stuff. So I would say that's it. That's the number one for me. What about you, Ron? What are you getting when the wife is out and the kids are asleep?
You know, Bell's Corners here's got the Vera's Burgers. That might be the spot I go. I mean, Jess and I both enjoy that, but if I'm by myself, I might wander on down there, pick something up like that, or you know, the other side of the spectrum, just even sushi. Just a big old soy sauce would be really great. I am interested too about what you guys would make for yourself if you are like if you're preparing a meal at home, what you would make for yourself in that scenario. Because I gotta say, if I'm at home by myself just like that, I'm making myself some kind of killer sandwich, like just some delicious triple stack or a nice bun, brioche kind of plush bun kind of sandwich like that. And I'm gonna be at the grocery store getting the little tiny condiments with like the specialty relishes or something like that, like something really tasty that only I'm gonna enjoy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so those would be my two. Both of them are sandwich oriented, I think, is my main takeaway I want to leave with you guys here. It's gonna be some handheld thing for the most
part.
Right. Nice. What about you, buddy?
For me, I usually go international. Megan and I, we like to order Indian when it's just the two of us or pad thai. And I know that we're not talking about what we order with the wives, but it's nice when she's not involved in the order because then I just spice it up. Megan's suburban white woman taste buds do not like when the heat starts coming. So, I love some nice, really spicy pad thai or some really nice spicy Indian food. Just enough to get you sweating and a little sniffly. Like you want to keep some extra paper towel around just, you know, because you got to wipe the face before you start dripping. Which
I could just, Ryan, I got to say, I could just picture you like shirt off, walking around the house with a big bowl of spicy food, just sweating.
It's not even a bowl. It's the plastic tub that it comes in and the chopsticks, just, you know, whatever I got that came with it. And I'm walking around just sweating. But yeah, I like going with those international orders and I like bringing the heat. Sometimes, you know, Megan's not a big fan of Five Guys. So I'll order like one of those Five Guys burgers with lots of jalapenos and salty fries. And those are good too. But on the subject of Ron's question, cooking at home, I like the sandwich. We bought one of those like Value Village. We bought one of those like little grilled cheese presses, $6. Just holds one sandwich. I can put two nice slices of rye on there. And then I don't know if you guys use the mayonnaise. I do mayonnaise on the outside of my bread instead of butter.
Woo!
Yeah, guys. If you're new to this, yeah, so you don't butter the outside of the bread for a grilled cheese. You put mayo on it. And it really, like, there's sugar in the mayonnaise. So it really adds that nice sort of crisp caramelization to your bread, which is banana lands. But then, you know, I like getting the sliced meats out. We always have some ham or some prosciutto or salami on hand. So it usually goes into one of those sandwiches with an excess amount of cheese. So yeah, I like that. And then what else do I like cooking when I'm always on eggs. I don't know why. It's probably university survival food during university. It's all I could really afford. So omelets, I usually end up dumping half the fridge into some kind of omelet.
Love that.
And then pork. Nobody in my family eats pork. They eat ham, but they don't eat like pork tenderloin or pork chops. Woo! I'm like, if I can do a little pork tenderloin, I'll do half for my own dinner and then half for lunch the next day or something like that. Just a small one. And I'll usually like, you know, rub it up with something, put it on the skillet, and then into the oven for a bit. I'll have myself a nice little pork tenderloin, some potatoes, because that's the stuff that the kids won't eat when I'm cooking. My wife doesn't eat it either. So those are my three takeouts and my three meals at home. Branks, you got a meal you cook when you're in dire straits and you're alone in the place or what?
Always pasta. I always love make myself like some sort of pasta dish. Caitlin doesn't really love pasta that much. So I'll go to great lengths to like make myself like some sort of pasta with a shit ton of Parmesan. I love putting so much Parmesan. Like there's a place in Toronto called Sugo. It's really popular. And like their Instagram feed is just like pasta plates with like a snowball's worth of Parmesan on top, and like that's like an aspirational level of Parmesan for me. And I always go to the store and buy like a hunk of that Reggiano and then just put it in my little grinder and just lay it over top, and then, you know, just eat a heap full of pasta. I don't know, that's something that like is very comforting. And since Caitlin doesn't like it, it's a nice little treat once in a while to just eat 1,000 calories worth of pasta or penne or whatever kind of pasta, you know. I'm not really picky, but
have you seen Bregs? Have you seen, like, I don't know where this place is. It's like it's a sandwich place, but it has like half of a wheel of Parmesan up on its end, and then there's a flame on top, and it melts the cheese, and then it gets poured over. It just gets tipped and all the cheese gets spooned onto this. I feel like if that was your, like if you had a half a wheel, every year you got yourself a half wheel and just, that would be your thing then.
It's so funny because at the local grocery store, like the hunk of Parm that they sell is humongous. It's like $30. And I'm like, I don't need that much. So every time I have to bring it to the deli counter for them to cut that big piece into half, like a half is a reasonable amount, like I just am not going to eat that much. But I definitely thought to myself, like, I've definitely seen it even at Costco. Like I think their just base amount is like a fucking kilo of that cheese. It's like $40 or $50, and I'm like, one day I'll buy it and I'll just have this thing just sitting in my fridge, and I'll be the happiest guy ever, because I know at any given moment I could just take off a rock-sized piece of Parm and just have that all in my pasta sauce. But it definitely makes it better. Like if you're like, I've recently gotten into like trying to make like some like more, not complex, but just more involved, like creamier sauces. And like I remember seeing one recipe, it was like 100 grams of shredded Parm, and I was like, when you shred 100 grams of Parm, like that's a lot of cheese, you know? At least it seems like a lot. So Yeah, I do love doing that because it just, I don't know, it makes it creamy and delicious. And pasta is very comforting food.
You mentioned the breaking off the piece of parm. That might be the best cheese bite around. When you get a new wedge of Parmesan,
I
know you guys are the same. You break off the end for yourself. You just break off that little sliver at the front before you start shredding, and that is maybe the best bite of cheese there is.
Man,
it's so salty.
Yeah,
and man, it's so good for you.
As a rule, like, because I do most of the cooking in my household, like the pieces of food you eat when you're like making other people, like my kids or my wife or whatever, you're like cutting up slices of cheese or whatever it has, you like that bite you take for yourself always is so friggin' delicious. Like whatever it is, whether it's like one chip, one piece of salami, like whatever the thing is, that one piece is always so delicious, you know? Like, and yeah, like the cheese is, you're spot on, Ron. Like, just break me off a little of that salty part. And like, it doesn't seem right to be eating it like that because it's really meant to be like shaken, but like, hell, why not? Just live a little, you know?
Yeah. Amen. If I have to convince you, Branks, the parm, you should get that $30 wheel of parm because it's the best for you. It's high in protein, low in fat compared to other cheeses. There's nothing wrong with parm. You should be putting it in everything. Like I use it in tuna salad sandwiches, chicken salad sandwiches, a little bit of salty parm on like, you know, those bag salads that you get.
Yeah.
Like I get the creamy dill bag salads, but a little salty parm. A little salty parm on almost any salad sets it off. Even just a normal house salad, a little salty parm on there. Bananas.
Yeah,
get the $30 parm, Branks.
Yeah I mean, listen, I use a lot of parm for the pizzas too that I make at home. That's another one I really enjoy doing for myself, although like I feel guilty about making pizza for myself and not Caitlin, so I don't do that quite as much. But like I've really nailed the homemade pizza situation at my house, and like, you know, I think about pizza pretty much every day, a few times a day, whether I'm having pizza or I'm gonna have pizza in the future. It's like it's a problem, man. It's a big problem.
Now, are you pizza stone in the oven?
I'm going baking steel. So I've been converted to carbon steel, like a big like piece of steel, because they say it's the best way to mimic what like your local pizza shop has in terms of their cooking situation. And the pizza steel, apparently it's able to transfer the heat a lot better to the dough. So even though you're set like between like, let's say a stone and a steel, you set your oven to 500, the heat transfers better. So it feels closer to the actual 500. And the comparison that was made to me is that like, when you put your oven at 550 and you put your hand in, it doesn't really feel like 550. But if you were to put it on the element, it would feel like, scorching. And that's the gist of it, essentially. So the one I make, it gets cooked in like 7 minutes, and it's like perfect. I gotta send you guys some photos, but it's like the right amount of chard and leoparding, and like when it gets finished, like the recipe I kind of follow is just a shit ton of parm on top, and it gets all like crunchy. It's fantastic.
Okay. You tell Caitlin that I say you deserve the $30 parm. you deserve it. Just put it at the back of the fridge.
She's not stopping me. It's my own guilty conscience.
Oh, well, I think you deserve it. So you go get yourself a nice big wheel of parm and you just tuck that back there. Frozen foods. I got one for you. I'll kick us off with this because I got a good little rec for you guys. My first one isn't food. You got to go to like TNT or one of the Asian markets that you got near your place, and you got to get the cheapest steamer basket you can get. Those little bamboo baskets.
The bow ones for like the
$25.
The dumpling.
Yep. And I use them for veg. I use them all the time. Use them for vegetables, you use them for dumplings, bao buns, and then that's my frozen recommendation. We always have a bag of Korean barbecue bao buns They're like the size of a baseball. You put them in the steamer three or four at a time, and they come out and they are perfect. The kids love them. They're so pillowy soft, and then they're full of like barbecue pork.
Ryan, I have a question. Do they go on top of like a boiling pot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just take a pot, you boil the water, put that thing on top, and then pop the buns on. And then how long is it? A couple of minutes or 5-10 minutes?
It says right on the instructions. I mean, Megan and I have lost track of time. We find you can't overcook them.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's like just over 10 minutes, like somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes, something like that. And to be honest, like, I'm pretty sure, like, sometimes we'll have vegetables boiling underneath if we're cooking something in the steamer like that. I'm pretty sure you could cook the rice underneath the steamer while you're cooking the bao buns on top. Hmm. We have a separate little rice cooker that's too easy, so we just use that.
Right.
The other suggestion I would make, and I can send you guys the pictures, but they're... I don't think normal people would reach for them thinking like these are going to be exceptional, but they're whatever KJ, this company, it's got Asian writing on it as well, has a bunch of different things. They got frozen dumplings. They've got pot stickers. They've got soup dumplings. They've got, and it's just a, like, it's a white styrofoam meat plate with usually anywhere between 15 and 25 of whatever's in the package. So pot stickers or dumplings or soup dumplings. And when I tell you guys, every time we cook something from one of those packs, it is restaurant quality perfect.
Mm.
Like, you got to get your own sauce. You can figure that out for yourselves. But the KJ brand, the packaging is so plain. It's not a big brand. We get it from FreshCo, and then I think I've seen them at Food Basics as well. I haven't seen them at Loblaws, Metro, and like the big Canadian, the big Canadian retailers. But I kid you not, I haven't been able to fuck them up. Like, it's like, oh, okay, these go in a pan with oil, and they come out, and it's like, wow, those are restaurant quality pot stickers. Yeah. And then, oh, these soup dumplings just go in the steamer like the bao buns, and they come out and like literally you bite into them and hot Asian soup sprays out, and then it's got a little meatball in it. And it's like, it blows my mind how good they are every time. And our fridge always has two packs in there just for a night when it's like, we're cooking rice, we're putting soy sauce on it, and we're doing a pack of this.
Nice.
And they're so good. If you've never heard of the KJ brand, I'll put a picture up for you guys to look out for it.
I know exactly which ones you're talking about, Ryan.
Super unsuspecting. You'd walk past the Asian frozen section and you'd never think those are going to be good. And they are fucking outrageous every time.
Yeah, that's a go-to in our household too. Like, the, not the KJ ones. I think they're like bagged, but like the dumplings, to my mind, is like the easiest thing I could whip together for Caitlin and I. And I got like a peanut butter sauce to go with it. And it's just super quick with a little side salad. It really goes a long way. Ditto with the dumplings, Ryan. There's like the Chimo ones we buy, and like, I just buy two boxes worth, and you know, I take a little bit of the potato cheese and bacon, and then just the four cheese, and mix those up, and you know, put them in a pot to boil for a bit, and then crisp them up on a pan, and that's another quick and easy to go meal that I really enjoy. And then like there's all the other stuff like pizzas and things you can throw in the oven, but the first two that I mentioned are like the ones that I find myself going to the most, because they're just kind of a little bit different, but they taste delicious and they're quite filling, I would say as well. But the dumpling one, I would like to try that. That's why I was asking you how you go about making them, because I love a good dumpling too. So getting a pack of those and just throwing them over this Asian steamer or whatever you said it was. That sounds like a good way to go as well.
Yeah, I'm jumping on that train too, like with the dumplings. And this has been a recent phenomenon for my house. And it might be because we've been playing that card game Sushi Go, which I recommend for any family. So much fun, that game. And there's obviously dumplings as part of that card game. And so it was an easy thing to get the girls to try. And we love them. We have them probably once a week, you know, and right out of the freezer. I've been boiling them. And then our new oven's got the air fry thing. So I do that just at the end to crisp them up. And yeah, just a hit. They're probably the number one on the list right now.
Wait a second. That's great. I have that setting on my oven too. That crisps them up, Ron, the air fry mode?
I think the pan you get, like the mesh, I think that's a big part of it.
Okay.
I don't know why the oven would be different. Like the way
I haven't figured that out because I have it too, and I haven't figured out what's
different about it. I think it's the pan that you put it on is a huge part of it. But it does work. I mean, they're crispy.
Okay.
The other thing I'm going to recommend, if you guys aren't hot to them yet, for frozen pizzas, if you go to Costco, you guys have Costco memberships? I don't know.
Yep.
But they're called the Detroit style. There's Detroit style pepperoni, and then they have a cheese once in a while. They usually have the pepperoni. It's a 2-pack, and they're pricey. They're like $18.99 for two. So you're paying like $9.50 a pizza. But I think the instructions say 22 to 25 minutes. You put them in for 28 minutes. Get them a little extra crispy, right? You want that crust underneath to be crispy. You want all that cheese around the edge. But it's a super thick Detroit style. It's the one frozen pizza where I put it in and one pizza will do us all, right? Okay. Because I always find with the frozen pizzas, they're so small or they're kind of chintzy. You almost need something else on top of that, right? Like a hefty side or a big salad or something, or second pizza. So these Detroit styles, it's just the one. You only need the one pizza, and it's again, it's like one of these restaurant quality, like you're paying more for it, but it's coming out so well done that it's like, I'm fine with paying $9.50 a pizza. That's great. Mm. So yeah, if you see them, it's a black and blue box. They say Detroit style all over them. And you're going to think twice, 'cause it's like, holy shit, I'm paying nearly $20 for two frozen pizzas, but they're fucking good. Really good.
Dude, that's not that crazy at all. 'Cause any, like, if you're not buying like the, you know, Delicio style pizzas, like any like name brand place that sells frozen pizzas are like $8 at the grocery store. So like for Detroit style, like $10 is totally like reasonable. And like, you got to figure, like, you're not doing anything. You're just popping it in the oven and doing it, like $10 a pie is like, it's like $30 for a Detroit style from a restaurant. Like, yeah, I take that. And you said they're good?
Really good. Another one of those things where, like, when I eat the last one in the freezer, it goes right on the list. Like, more. Next time at Costco, Detroit style pizza. The problem with Costco is, like, sometimes they have them and sometimes they don't, right? So it's like, shit, I haven't had a Detroit style in, like, 3 months. And then I'll see them and I'm like, oh.
It literally is going on my list. Like, so we usually do like a Monday or Tuesday Costco order from like the same day from Instacart. And then like later in the week, I'll just do a regular groceries, like a food basics to top up just like the stuff that like we don't need in bulk. And like, I just have an ongoing list until I order and then just like put everything in the cart. And I just looked it up and those Detroit style pizzas are in stock. So I have to get them. I just have to.
Yeah, and like I said, Branks, you want to leave them in for an extra like 2-3 minutes.
Yeah,
don't short crispy. Yourself. Yeah, you want them crispy.
I've been meaning to make a Detroit style like at home to try my hand at that, because the like one guy I follow for like pizza tips like seems to make a pretty tasty looking pie, but I mean, I'll eat any pizza that's put in front of me.
I gotta get on the bread and dough train like our boy Reg here. He's got the breads and the doughs down. I wanna make a focaccia. Because I feel like that's like almost, if you can make a focaccia, you can turn that shit into almost anything.
I mean, it's just gonna be great. It's like a variation of a focaccia because it's the same. It's a similar kind of dough because it's like it rises and it's thicker. And like when you put out a focaccia, you're like degassing it. And then when you cook it, it's sort of that same shape. It's sort of like on the thicker side of things. And I think focaccias are pretty easy to do. Not that I've done one myself, but from having watched many videos, it seems pretty straightforward.
Should be straightforward.
Yeah, should be.
All right, boys, that was a great one. Yeah. Nice. Kept it under an hour. That was sweet. And it's great getting together. We're going to do another one soon.
Yes.
For sure. Boys, it was nice seeing you. Let's do it again soon.
Way to wrap it up, boys. Talk to you soon.
Love it.
Thank you so much for joining us today, guys. We hope you like what the Grasscutter Social Club is putting out there. We can't wait to see you guys again in about a month with a new inductee to the Grasscutter Social Club. If you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast for any future updates, and share with your friends who you think might also enjoy our pod. If you want to follow us on social media, check us out on Instagram at Grasscutter Social Club. Cheers, and until next time, take care.